This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Women in Hollywood came forward this weekend at the Golden Globes to declare that time is up for tolerating sexual harassment. Their new initiative is one of many bubbling up to shine a light on gender inequality and harassment in the workplace. A new production from Raleigh Little Theater will continue the conversation on stage through a play called What We're Up Against. It follows the story of Eliza, a new employee at a male-dominated architecture firm who quickly discovers the toxic gender politics at her office. The play opens this Friday, and joining me now for a preview is director Heather Strickland. Heather, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Tell us about this, because this play goes back a while. It has quite a genealogy this point. So tell us about
this. So Teresa Rabeck actually wrote this, the first draft of it in the 90s was a very different play at that time. And it was really driven by some of her experiences working in television. She has since blogged about her experience working on the hit TV series Smash, which she was a writer on. And it was there's a lot about her experience working as a television writer, which is certainly another very male-dominated field. So originally the script started in that environment, and I'm not sure the exact evolution of it, but has come to not only become a full-length play, it started as a one-act, but also starts to take place in an architecture firm.
And it comes in the era also of Anita Hill and her testimony and mm-hmm. all of that discussion around harassment in the workplace, which seems like another time. And in many ways, there was a moment in which when that all ended, we thought, okay, that's over and we have evolved.
No, in fact, we are still up against some things, is really a point that this script drives home. This story does take place in 1992, but we are certainly left wondering, why is it still so relevant? Right. And the story itself points that out and makes that point and in many ways leaves us asking that question.
But also as a director, I think you had some strong feelings about this, the script itself, because in some ways there are sort of dated moments in the play and how to bring this up to date. So what kind of conversations did you have around that?
Yeah, so my friend and the artistic director of Raleigh Little Theater, Patrick Torres, handed me this script over a year ago. And over a year ago, we had not yet had Senator Elizabeth Warren being told to sit down on the Senate floor. We had not yet had the Me Too campaign. So, you know, while yes, a year ago when he handed me the script, it was incredibly relevant, I have lived with the understanding that I was going to be responsible for telling the story as those things happened over the past year. And I absolutely felt the weight of those things and the story that I was about to tell on a very large stage.
Did it change your approach or your understanding of the play or your approach to either casting or directing this play?
I think what changed is my passion and motivation for wanting to tell it. Certainly the issue of gender inequity has always been something that has been important to me. Several years ago, I directed an all-female production of Shakespeare's Titus Andronicus with the same kind of drive to like really unearth gender inequities and what happens to the relationships between women within this environment, because they tend to tear each other down in an attempt to rise to those limited leadership roles. So it's always been important to me. I think with the current conversation that's happened over the past year, I became more driven to tell this story, and my passion only increased. I'm also a mother of a daughter, and certainly being a mom and trying to explain to my daughter the reality that she lives in a way that doesn't disparage her from trying to knock down those walls and break through those glass ceilings is something that continues to grow.
Well, and the complexity of that project, I think, is also illustrated in this play. This is a play that doesn't leave a lot of good guys by the end of the thing. There's a lot of kind of mixed character in all of these, in all of the characters in the play. Samantha, you play the character Eliza. Could you tell us a little bit about Eliza?
Yes. It was a really interesting role for me to take on. There are a lot of things that Eliza does in this play that personally I would never do.
She's in an architect. We haven't even really set up the plot. She's an architecture firm, right?
Yes, okay. It's an architecture firm. And I'm not giving anything away by saying that Eliza is fairly new to the company. So she's only been there 5 months. But she's extremely talented and very, very driven and isn't being allowed to show that talent. On that note, I totally understand that and was very excited to take on the role and show how women can be strong and don't always, you know, have to step back and apologize for things. But the play is so complex. It has the characters doing some things that maybe some people would disagree with.
A lot of office politics that get mean
exactly.
and nasty and undermining and all that sort of thing too. So it's not this is not a melodrama where the sort of the evil villain is twirling their mustache with the whole thing.
And it is a comedy.
And it's a comedy after all. Well, maybe you could do a scene for us, set it up, and we'll talk more about it afterward.
Sure. So this is a scene between Ben and Eliza. It's in a later portion of the play. So some things have come to light. And the drama is getting a little heated. What is it I did again? No, let me tell you what I did. I came to work. And even when I was being shut out, I worked hard. I showed him that design. I showed it to him, and he couldn't even remember it. He was too busy condescending and dismissing and shoving me into a broom closet.
Grow up, okay? Stu is an old drunk. And this job is all he's got, and you worked his nerves.
I worked his nerves?
Tell me if I got this wrong. You went in there, and you told him you've been meeting with David, who everyone assumes you're sleeping with.
I'm not sleeping with David.
Who cares if you are or you're not? It's what they think, and you're letting them think that.
I'm not letting them think
And then
anything.
You go in there, and you threaten him.
I was at the end of my rope.
Maybe you were. This, however, is a little more deliberate.
Yeah, well, maybe someone around here should have given me something to do once in a while. I clearly have too much time on my hands.
Look, I was on your side.
You weren't on my side. You could have been. You could have thrown me a bone once in a while, but you didn't want to rock the boat. Weber came in. Stu was all infatuated with that. Why do they fall for those guys? God, everywhere I go, these golden boys with their architalk. What is it about a pretty boy with no brain that makes these jerks with power start singing love songs? Do they see themselves in these talent-free idiots? Oh, who cares? But that's what happened. Weber came in, and you felt a little threatened, so you stuck with the party line. Keep the girls in their place. Don't go telling yourself you're the nice guy, Ben. You could have done something. And you didn't. That doesn't make you nice. That makes you a coward.
And why was I supposed to stick my neck out for you? Because of your charm?
Because it was the right thing to do. I came here, you stuck me in a closet, and expected me to just take it. You tried to erase me. Well, you can erase me all you want, but you cannot erase that. That is real. My talent is as real as a tree.
Actor Samantha Corey and Brian Westbrook performing a scene from the upcoming production What We're Up Against by Raleigh Little Theater on stage at Leggett Theater at William Peace University. And it starts this Friday. Of course, the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Brian, tell us a little bit about your character in this production and how your views evolve.
Sure. I play Ben, who has been an architect with this firm for several years. I'm guessing at least 10 years. He is a senior architect there. And someone like Eliza comes in, who is headstrong and is obviously talented. I think that the journey that Ben goes through is one where in which the system that he's been working in, although it's been benefiting him for a long time and benefits most people for a long time, you don't really see how corrupt something is until someone like Eliza might come in and shove it in front of your face. And so I, I, I'm happy that Ben gets to go on that kind of journey in this play.
Well, let's talk, Heather, about directing this play, because it does have the sort of the dynamics of office politics and was written, after all, by someone who had been writing sitcoms for a while. Mm-hmm. So it has all of those elements. And as a director, you have to sort of be faithful to all of that, right? Mm-hmm. It's all sort of streaming through, which is what we're all dealing with.
Yeah.
If we're going to confront these issues, we have to do it in the white water of our lives, mm-hmm. that has got all these other turbulence, including office politics, mm-hmm. Roiling through it.
Yeah. So I think one of the beautiful things about this script, as Sam mentioned earlier, it is a comedy. And there were so many times that I read the script and I would get very emotional reading this script, more because of the reaction that I was personally having to the story that we were telling. And I was really worried about, how do I find the funny in this script? I know it's here. I know I have to be faithful to it. And also, you know, humor is such a strong tool, because when we enter a theater and we start laughing, we become comfortable and we become very open, and we are more susceptible for hearing some of these messages that all of us need to hear. This isn't a show that will just preach to those that maybe have sexist tendencies anyway. This is something that we can all learn from. And really, during the rehearsal process, certainly hearing the script in the voices of these incredibly talented actors, and watching them embrace the humor with such sincerity, which is truly funny, really allowed us to discover all those different dimensions, as well as these very complex characters. As you mentioned earlier, nobody is flawless in this. These are real people, and it is a real office environment. And there are moments of humor, even when it's hard.
And there are plenty of examples, certainly in the entertainment business and in theater, but this one centers on an architecture firm. And joining our conversation now is Erin Sterling Lewis, co-founder of In Situ Studio. She teaches at North Carolina State University's College of Design, and she's going to moderate a panel after the opening night of this performance on Friday. Erin, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Frank.
What did you think of this play?
Oh, my goodness. It was very entertaining at first. I tell everyone, told Heather and the cast when I first read through it, and there's so much talk about ducts as the architectural feature that is featured, if you will, in the play.
Ducts. These are the airway passages,
absolutely,
in your architecture.
The mechanical system of the building and the conversations around it. I mean, that's one of the things that really rose to the top. It's like, gosh, we are super nerds as architects. And that is very apparent throughout the play. So I really enjoyed that. But apart from that, I think that the message this play announces is really important right now. It always has been, but it's really important now, because I do think that while the play takes place in 1992, we have made a lot of improvements since then, but we need to keep that going. We're not quite where we need to be.
Well, what's been your experience in the field as an architect?
Well, so it's the play was 1992. I entered into the field of practice in 2002. And I walked into a small firm of about, it was six people, I think, and two were women. And that was about the diagram of any sort of office that I ever worked in, or office setting. I only worked in that office before opening my own with my business partner, Matt Griffith. And even today, our dynamics, we still have a small office, but we are five people, three are male and two are female. So it's better, I think, than it was in 1992, but again, still not quite
well.
Where
tell
it
us about your
be.
Decision. Forgive me for interrupting. I interrupted the woman in a conversation about.
How dare you?
Equity. Did anybody hear that? If you missed it, let me point it out. but you did start your own firm, and you started it with a partner who is a man. Tell us about that decision and what kinds of decisions you were making going forward as you created that that office.
Yes, it was very intentional, and you know, we've been working together, Matt and I, for 11 years, and at first, I would say our relationship was pretty tenuous, because we had Matt is a very dominant person, and I do tend to be more like Janice in the play, who's a bit submissive. I have a fierce side for sure. But you can imagine when those two forces come together, there is conflict. And so I think that's why I love this play, and I'm always looking for the hope and the bright side to everything, because the relationship I've had with Matt over 11 years, us working together in an office before beginning our own, we have really grown into that tension and made the most of it. And I'm incredibly proud of that relationship and the office that we've been able to set up and the way that we've been able to support each other. I'm incredibly proud that we have that sort of office and can set that example for others.
It seems that based on what you just said, that it's precisely having the conversation, first of all, watching these enactments and sort of theatrical and imaginative representations, but then having the conversation is really the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we talk about all of the other dynamics that we have to sort through, I happen to be a more submissive personality. On my part, I really happen to be a dominant, you know, charging kind of a personality. To take that into account, if I happen to be male and you happen to be female, how do we work through it?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like conversation might be it, the willingness to sit down, let's talk about this, right?
Yeah, it's talking about it very consistently. But I think the other thing that helps is that we're lucky to have a small studio space that we all work in. So all five of us are in the same room. And so three men and two women are in the same room all day long. And so the conversations, which is different from the play, where there are offices, each person has their office. So these conversations are forced upon us every day, whether deliberate or just sort of subliminal. We're always having these conversations about those dynamics between men and women.
Which is different than even, say, 20 or 30 years ago when it all happened and everybody just made assumptions about why it was happening and nobody sort of brought it to the surface. So let me ask you about this, Aaron, because women make up close to 50% or more of students in architecture schools, if I've got this right. But recent statistics show they only make up a quarter of the profession and maybe 17% of principals and partners. You think we're in process here? Or is there some kind of a real barrier?
No, it actually is. I was just speaking with last night one of our panelists, Lou Jurkowski, who's a fellow in the American Institute of Architects. And I was saying these statistics to her, and she hadn't kept up with them in a little while. And she thought, oh, my gosh, that has really improved since she was last in tune with this. So that was really encouraging to me. And you do see each year these statistics get a little bit better over time.
Heather, let me ask you, Heather Strickland, the director of this play, as part of the performance, you and the cast have been having a lot of conversations on the side, and you've actually created a podcast, some podcast episodes. Tell us about that and what has stood out for you in the conversations and in creating this podcast.
Sure. So, you know, it's one thing to engage in the art of theater, to raise the awareness and understanding of the folks that come to see it. It's another thing to build a community that is also doing the same thing as they create the show. And that's something that's always been very important to me, that as, you know, we come together as a cast and a crew and a production house to tell the story, that we've got to learn too as we go. And so I have surrounded myself with some really talented and very smart people. In some of the podcasts that we did, we engaged somebody at the Women's Center. Her name is Claire Cunahan, and she is a program officer there. And I've worked with her before. She actually worked on the production of Titus Andronicus with me to provide that layer of, you know, what is the dynamic? She certainly has a broad understanding of specific gender inequities, but inequities across the board, and to help facilitate the discussion in a way that I never could, because she is trained in this issue, in social change, in how do we create discussion that leads to social impact. So for her to come in and to not be a theater person, because I do think that that's important, and to look at this and going, wow, you have this incredibly unique platform. You have a unique voice. How can I take my expertise and layer it on top of that so that we're not just coming in, watching a story, and then getting in our cars, having a conversation, driving away. But what is the next step to that? So she provided a lot of insight into the script, into the characters, into the gender politics that are happening in the script. And she also introduced me to Dr. Sharon Cannon, who is another one of our podcast interviewees. And she is a specialist in gender communications in the workplace, which I really couldn't believe that I found somebody with that narrow of an expertise.
With a minor in architecture. No.
But she really provided some insight into just the differences in language and how women physically present themselves in the workplace and how men physically present themselves in the workplace. And so you start to understand, you know, what we're up against, yes, is sexism, but the subtle ways that that plays out, you know, it's that moment of feeling completely overwhelmed with the issue because you see how it reaches so deep into who we are and how we walk through this world on a day-to-day basis. But at the same time, we can see it. And sometimes awareness is enough to start to shift that tide.
Heather Strickland is the director of the upcoming production What We're Up Against from Raleigh Little Theater. Heather, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you so much.
Also talked with Aaron Sterling Lewis, the co-founder of In Situ Studio and a professor of the practice at NC State College of Design. She's going to moderate a panel conversation after the opening night of the performance. Aaron, thank you.
Thank you.
And actors Samantha Corey and Brian Westbrook, actors in the production, thank both of you for being in the program.
Thank you.
The production is What We're Up Against. It opens Friday and runs through January 28th at Leggett Theater at William Peace University. And you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the story of an interracial farm in rural Mississippi that started in 1936 and went for 20 years. More on that in a moment. Stay tuned.